You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Elliot Weinberger describes the ancient beliefs of the Mandaeans, a Gnostic sect in Iraq that follows John the Baptist, in the May issue of Harper's Magazine. He's here for this week's Underreported, along with Dr. Suhaib Nashi, a co-founder of the Mandaean Human Rights Group, for a discussion of some of the recent challenges facing the Mandaeans: killings, rapes, forced conversions, and displacement. I'm very pleased to welcome them both to our show. Hello. Can you hear us, Dr. Nashi?
I can, yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, let's begin with you, Elliot. Your essay on the Mandaeans appears in your new book, An Elemental Thing. Is it fair to say that all the essays in this book explore topics that on some level are mysterious or mythological?
Yeah, I think that's true. I've been writing about politics for the last 6 or 7 years, and I sort of wanted to get back to basics. So most of the essays in that book concern mythologies, religious beliefs, and also just the elements of the world.
And how did you come upon the Mandaeans as a topic?
Well, I was reading something, and I saw a reference to this group, the Mandaeans, who I knew nothing about. So I started reading some of the scholarly books about it, and discovered this whole world, which is familiar and strange at the same time. I mean, it's familiar in certain respects to what we know from the Judeo-Christian religion, and yet also completely different.
Saeib, how many Mandaeans are there worldwide?
I believe there were the Mandaeans lived on the Iraq-Iran border, and apparently there were about 60,000 living there during the time of Saddam Hussein. Now I believe there's only about 5,000 left. They've been driven out by the war, and particularly by Islamic fundamentalists who have been persecuting them.
Well, let's bring Dr. Nashi in to this. So there are only 5,000 left in the homeland.
Yeah,
now, this is the border of Iran and Iraq, but not the same border that the Kurds live in?
Absolutely. We don't go up that north. The numbers are almost right, you know, the 5 to 7,000 left in Iraq, mostly in the south part, and the the Euphrates and Tigris, the Sinai, and the Mesopotamia area, and down south from Basra. However, a lot of people went up to Baghdad for the last 20, 30 years, and they lived there as productive people.
Well, you grew up in Baghdad, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I left Iraq in 1991. I was about 37 at that time.
And you live here.
Yes.
Do you find that most Americans have never heard of the Mandaeans, or even realize that there's a religion that grew out of the teachings of John the Baptist?
Absolutely. I never met an American who told me yes, except maybe like 2 weeks ago, and they say, yeah, we heard about you before on the news. And that's the first time ever I have that response from any American. I told them I'm a Mandaean.
The Mandaeans are often described as a Gnostic sect. Are they Christians?
We're not. Gnostic is we're totally different in the way how we look to the world and how we look to the good and evil in the world and how do we implement that on ourselves. And we believe that the knowledge comes from inside you. We don't believe that God actually sends prophets or people to come. The knowledge should be come inside you, and there's always a conflict between good and evil inside every human being, and he's made of these two, and God gave you mind to decide what's good. And, of course, with the teachings of the great teachers, including John the Baptist as our last great teacher, and the way he taught us the religion, we can make the good actually have the upper hand in ourselves.
Well, since John the Baptist baptized Jesus, why don't the Mandaeans choose to see him as a great teacher?
The teachings does say there's some controversy about that particular baptism, and what we think that the way the religion went after John the Baptist died is different than the way we look at our religion and ourselves, and we think that there was a shift between the two religions after John the Baptist. One went towards Christianity and the way they look at life, and one went to the other side of the earth. We went to to the Mesopotamia, and we had this new so is a new look of how things should work in the earthly world.
So Mandaeans were around 500 years by the time Muhammad came along. Do Mandaeans recognize Muhammad as a teacher?
No.
If not a prophet?
I mean, we don't like to discuss how our religion looks at the era after, Islam came in, but most of the time we were hiding in certain areas, and we're trying to appease we're peaceful we're pacifists by doctrine, and we don't fight, we don't carry guns, and we use dialogue, we use money, and we use escape as our self-defense mechanism. That we never had a town to live in. But during the Islam era, we were never recognized as a people of the book, although we were mentioned three times the Quran, and that put us always under the mercy of the local cleric or the school of the ruler, and whether they will recognize us as people of the book, then we become pay jizya, which is the money that you put for other religions, and if they don't recognize us, then we have either to be killed or leave the area, and that's our history, really.
I'm talking with Dr. Suhaib Nashi, co-founder of the Mandaean Human Rights Group, and with Elliot Weinberger, a poet, translator, and now mostly essayist on political matters. His essay on the Mandaeans appears in his latest collection of essays, An Elemental Thing, which is published by New Directions Press. It also is featured in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. Elliot, how did you go about researching the Mandaeans? Is there a lot of literary material on them?
There's not a lot. I mean, there's a wonderful scholar in the 30s and 40s named Lady Ethel Drower, who collected a lot of Mandaean things. She learned the Mandaic language, translated a lot of their sacred texts. And then there have been certain scholars since then. So there's a small number of books in English on the Mandaeans.
And there was an old book by Ricoldo Panini, wasn't there?
Uh-huh.
He the first one to actually write about them?
I'm not
from
sure.
The West?
I think Drower possibly was the first. I mean, they go... Oh, sorry, the... back in, there are reports of the Mandaeans as far back as the 13th century. And Panini is the first person to, the first outsider to visit them and report on them.
Did he suggest there was any conflict at that time between Mandaeans and other religious groups?
No, I mean, it seems that he was quite taken with them as a friendly people, but as a deeply religious people with a number of unusual practices. Going back to what was said earlier, I think it has to be pointed out that the Mandaeans venerate not only John the Baptist, but they venerate Mary, mother of Jesus, but they believe that Mary was impregnated by an evil demon, who then gave birth to Jesus, who is considered a false prophet. I think the Mandaeans come out of that very interesting world in the Middle East in the centuries before and after Jesus, when you have lots of different religious groups.
Well, the Zoroastrians were really important.
Yeah, but I mean, you have all of the various Gnostic groups and the Manichaeans, and then different versions of what became Christianity. And you have all of these different narratives about many of the same mythological and historical figures that we know from Judeo-Christian tradition, except the narratives are completely different. And it seems almost at random how one of those narratives then became the triumphant narrative and then became what we think of as Christianity today. So that, for example, for the Mandaeans, Abraham and Moses were Mandaeans, but they're renegades who left the faith and form Judaism, so that the Mandaeans actually have a holiday that celebrates the Egyptians who were chasing the Jews when the Jews left Egypt and the Red Sea parted and the Egyptian soldiers went after them, and then when the sea came together again, they were drowned. The Mandaeans have a holiday that celebrates those Egyptians who they say were Mandaeans and were actually just fighting against renegades against their faith.
So maybe you want to go on to do that a little more. As I understand it, the Mandaeans think of themselves as descendants of one of Noah's sons.
Yes.
Right. Right.
So do before Noah, do they pretty much share the biblical story of the Old Testament? Do things change after Noah?
Is that for me?
Yes.
First thing I just want to just add for this about the celebration of the people who drowned. Actually, it's not very clear in our religion, and most of the current priests think that the celebration we do for the people who drowned in water because of the type of food we use, which is only grains, is actually related to people who drowned in Noah flood, not in the Egyptian flood, because we had very little relation with the Egyptian Gnosticism, and that's our main, you know, most of the interpretation of that story came later on, which was not very accurate and not very true.
What about some of the other things that I've heard, that Mandaeans don't wear blue, that they believe ours is one of 365 universes?
This is there are different rituals and symbols and things and religions. Some of them are very ancient. We don't understand why they came to us this way. You know, we don't wear the certain, we don't like certain colors. I don't think that's a very important issue as much as the way we look at the world and the way we look at the life and how the conflict between evil or basically the world of light and the world of darkness will conflict, and that, how that should happen in a human soul, on a human body, which is made of two things, good and evil, and always the good should be having the upper hand in your own body. And that's a very, very distinct thing in Mandaeism, is that we think that we are a unity. There's always good and bad in anything, and usually as the upper hand should be for the good by following the teachings, by reading the books, by getting the secrets, and by enlightenment through knowledge inside you to put the upper hand of the good inside you. God has very little thing to do on your own daily decisions, for example.
You are responsible for everything that you do.
That's absolutely. He gave you the things, and it's inside you to decide the balance at certain point. Even when you get sick, the balance was to the evil on the good inside you, and because you things that was not followed properly and things like that.
Now, since Mandaeans venerate John the Baptist, water is a key force in the religion. Is it true that Mandaeans cannot drink water from a tap or a bottle?
No, that's not true. Actually, it depends on how clean that water is and how. And there are definitely teachings now that actually allow us to drink from tap as long as it's, you know, running for a while. Priests try to attach themselves to water, the running water in the rivers. However, the modern priests have actually moved on to using tap water sometimes for their own daily life and when traveling and doing things. But still, the running water in the rivers represent, because during the 5 days of creation, the fourth day is where God created running waters in the world of light, and it moved through him to the world of light. So it represents something holy and something spiritual value rather than just cleanliness. But I think by that time, anciently, the only clean water was the running water.
Right, and it would be impossible for anyone living in a city to get running water. But
absolutely.
Let's talk a bit about what's been happening to the Mandaeans. Yeah. Your father was one of the first to lobby for the rights of Mandaeans in the 1960s.
Absolutely.
What was going on in Baghdad in the 1960s that inspired this Mandaean human rights movement?
The thing is, if you talk about the last, from the 50, like the 20s to the 60s, where the nationalism and national Arab thing was actually rising in the area, which actually took the upper hand above religion issues, and now becoming you're an Arab or you're not an Arab and issues like that. And
well, are Mandaeans Arabs? Because part of the pan-Arab movement was also Christian Arabs.
We were Arabized. I mean, we have our own language, we have our own clothes. However, in that area, that's exactly what happened, is most of these, the Christians, the Mandaeans, the Jews, were considered Arabs but have different religions. And there was no differentiation between, there was like Sunni and Shia and things, but the main thing was you're Arab or a Kurd or an Iranian or whatever, and that was superseding on things. And what happened at that time, all those minorities were refused to get their language, they refused to wear their clothes, they refused to do this and that, because on the national, you're all Arabs, you don't have to use this, it actually started with the Turkey, you know, with Ataturk movement and things like that. So what happened in the 60s is when people wanted to celebrate their own religion holidays, they wanted to have their own teaching, they have their own school, the Mandaeans, with my father and other, other leaders, started to lobby the government to give us some of these rights, to give us some of the things. They were partially successful in some of the recognition, but the Mandaeans were never recognized in the law as a separate entity. They were all called a sect, but they were never recognized as a single religion that is on standing and teachings with the other religions in Iraq up until this era.
So when the Ba'athists came to power, and especially Saddam, did things get better? Did they get worse?
Actually, it's on the, if you look at it, Saddam was only cared for his regime, and as a totalitarianism, how much you serve that purpose and how much you serve that, let me put it, as a chair, or how much you serve the center. What he did is actually destroyed a lot of the religion inside by trying to implementing some of his own people, the Ba'ath Party members and things, inside the religious establishments to the highest level, which actually destroyed a lot of the trust inside the community itself between the religious establishment and the community, and they had a lot of problem. He tried to look as supporter of all religions, but in actuality, he did not. He didn't care. What he cared for is just, and that actually hit the heart of the religion in the center, and it's affected off a lot of our behavior for the last maybe 5 or 10 years. A lot of people actually escaped from Iraq in the end of the 90s. Tens of thousands actually went to Europe and other things, in addition, of course, to the political issue. But for the religion itself, he actually hurt it, although it doesn't look on the surface that he did anything wrong.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding was that Saddam, I mean, which, after all, for all its crimes and excesses, was a secular regime, and that there was a kind of general tolerance of the Mandaeans during the Saddam regime, and that really what's happened now since the fall of the Saddam regime is this unleashing of the fundamentalist elements who are kidnapping, executing, having forced circumcisions of the Mandaeans who are not circumcised, and so forth and so on, destroying of shops and things like that, and the real anti-Mandaean violence has really occurred since the fall of Saddam.
Well, is it just in Iraq? Are we talking about Sunni and Shiite extremists targeting Mandaeans?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, definitely Sunni and Shia both, and I have evidence, a lot of people, like a car was stopped in a Shia neighborhood outside Iraq on Iskenderiye. All the Sunni were put aside, plus they asked the another Mandaean there, who are you? Said Mandaean. They stopped him on the side. They shoot them all, and that happened to be my first cousin. On the other, there's another car going to Syria through Sunni neighborhoods, and they stopped it. They took the Shia to the side. They killed them, plus a Mandaean, his wife and his kid, and that's happening on the Romani. And that's happening every single day. At the last 3 days, for example, there are gangs going on in Dora area in Baghdad. On the Christians and the Mandaean houses, tell them if they don't leave in 3 days, they will be shot and dead. We don't know how serious they are, who are they, but people now start, you know, panicking, whatever. So they are targeted, both sides. Both sides consider them as an infidel. There's a difference between the government, we meet them, they say, oh, we'll protect you, we'll do, but they can't even protect, you know, simple things. So actually the streets are out of the hands of any control, and people both for political reasons and for criminal reasons are targeting minorities, whether Christians or Mandaeans, and they are really, unfortunately, were very successful in cleaning up a lot of areas completely out of Mandaeans, where numbers are so small, so it immediately appears on us, you know, a couple of houses and you're gone. And that destroys both the religion and the humanitarian issue, you know, the Mandaean themselves.
I think it's worth pointing out that Iraq is, we tend to think of Iraq as Sunnis and Shias and Kurds, but Iraq is really a mosaic of many different cultures. And one of the great tragedies since the invasion of Iraq is the persecution of so many of these minorities. There's Chaldean Christians, Assyrian Christians, Baha'is, Yazidis, and so forth and so on. And basically, this was not news at all. When I was writing my article on the Mandaeans, there was practically nothing in the news until February, when an organization in England, Minority Rights Group International, did a report on the state of the minorities in Iraq, and then this was picked up by people like Patrick Coburn in England, but still has not become a story here at all.
But what about Iran? Because Mandaeans live in Iran as well, and Iran has also seen persecution of minorities,
yeah,
especially Baha'is and Zoroastrians. Have they been going after the Mandaeans as well?
Yes, absolutely. And actually, the United States has a very good stance on it. They accepted all those minorities, particularly the Baha'i and the Mandaeans, as a priority 2 visa. And now most of the Iranian Mandaeans are moving to the United States, and they are being populated in Texas and Virginia and some other areas, and they're coming. However, that particular application was never applied to the Iraqi Mandaeans. Although they're suffering now, actually almost the same, even worse than what they're suffering in Iran, but that's never been implemented for them, and we're really looking forward for that, because Mandaeans are slightly different from other minorities in Iraq in that they don't have an enclave for them considered as safe haven like the others. The second, we are very small numbers, so we're actually having, in addition to the humanitarian issue, is another catastrophe, which is the cultural issue. Now about we have 10,000 Mandaeans in Syria and Jordan sitting there, and if you divide them 3,000 here, 3,000 here, 3,000 here, this will destroy the religion itself and the cultural issue, which is, I consider, a huge humanitarian. We've been surviving for more than 2,000 years, and it's an unfortunate thing that humanity leave this religion and this culture disappear, the language disappear, and everything. Just a true saving lives is important, but I think saving the culture is another important that we have to look at.
Now, what happened with the constitution, with the Iraqi constitution? Were the Mandaeans mentioned?
Actually, at the beginning, the religious authority there refused to put the Mandaeans, and they want to say others, you know, in addition of the other minorities. We worked hard with the U.S. Institute of Peace, and we worked there hard as Mandaean things in the constitution. We were successful in putting the Mandaeans as part of the mosaics, like you said, in Iraq. But that's in the constitution. The second line in the constitution actually destroys the first. Whenever they mentioned whoever, it says that every single thing should really respect the soul, not even just the soul. It should be the letter of the Quran, which actually, for me, it's a more fundamental approach to things rather than, for example, even the Egyptian constitution or the Pakistani constitution, which guarantee for the minorities there at least a seat in the parliament to represent themselves. That was never been put in our constitution. And in any way, that was never followed anyway up until now.
I think it should be pointed out that there's 2 million refugees from Iraq who are now living abroad. It's the greatest refugee crisis in the world since the founding of Israel, actually. And the U.S. does have a program for refugees, but they've only allowed 466 refugees from Iraq to come to the U.S. In the last 4 years, because, of course, the Bush administration doesn't want to recognize the fact that there are many Iraqis who would prefer not to live in Iraq under freedom.
We want to thank both of you so much for talking with us today for the first segment of our underreported series. Dr. Suhaib Nashi, the co-founder of the Mandaean Human Rights Group, and Elliot Weinberger, whose latest book called An Elemental Thing from New Directions Press has an essay on the Mandaeans. It's also being published in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. Thank you both so much.
Thank you very much. ¶¶